Hello and welcome to another episode of Take Back Your Power with Caroline. All right, let's get right into it. So last week I discussed the intro, and in the intro I touched base on the initiative as well as the vision. So tonight I'm going to start off with my story. Now, my story started when I was 15 years old, and the thing is, I was already on a path of destruction. My dad passed away when I was 14, and I didn't know how to deal with everything because he was somebody that I looked up to. He was a role model. He was everything to me, especially coming from a broken home where my mom chose otherwise, or she left the communal home. So my dad was the one to take care of me, and he was the one that was responsible for me. And he showed a lot of love and affection. He was very compassionate. You know, everything that a girl child will look for in a father, he was everything that I looked up to. And when he passed away, my whole life came crashing down right before my very eyes. So I didn't know how to deal with all of that. I turned to the wrong things. I turned to alcohol and smoking and clubbing and all the things that a 15-year-old should not be doing. And that is how I met my abuser, on a night where I went out to the nightclub. And when I met my abuser, like, you know, I wasn't really interested, but I mean, he was like way older than I was, 8 years older than me. And as time went on, you know, he was very, very persuasive and, you know, saying the right things. Being older than I was, like, you know, he had a smooth tongue and he knew what to say. Being a man, because that's basically what an older guy would do. Like, he would know how to get the girl that he wants by saying the right things and doing the right things. But as time went on, I started losing myself even more. I mean, already being on this path of destruction, already losing my identity, it got even worse. Where I used to be a very outgoing, extroverted, bubbly person. And well, after meeting my abuser, I became an introvert. I stopped like going out with my friends. I stopped like certain habits. I changed the way I dressed. And this was all because of him, because he did not like the idea. He did not like the idea that I had friends. He did not like the idea of me going out. He did not like the way I dressed, etc., etc. So the one night, before all of these dislikes of his came to light, we actually went to one of my friend's place. And when we got there, she was there with her boyfriend and like a couple of our other school friends. And we all drank alcohol, obviously. So he did not like the idea, you know, like I was speaking to the other guys or my friend's boyfriend. And I mean, we're all friends, so like, I didn't see any issues with that. So that was the first night that he hit me. We were actually walking back home, and he pulled my hair. That was the first thing that he did. And then he hit me. He slapped me, and he said I was acting like a bee. And I was actually quite shocked. We were with another friend of his. I was really shocked because, like, that never happened to me and I didn't know how to handle it. And as we were approaching the street where I lived, he asked me, like, should he go home or should he come accompany me to my place? And, like, at that moment, I didn't want to aggravate him even further. So I was like, no, it's fine. You can come back to my place. But in my mind, I'm like, you know, the next day, like, I'm gonna get rid of this guy. So he left the next day, and like, I was still in shock. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know like why he did all of those things. And as time went by, I mean, obviously at that moment, being 15 years, I wasn't in a good space, in the sense that I was still very confused about who I was. And he took full advantage of that, especially seeing that there was no male figure in my life. So there wasn't anyone to come to my rescue or to my defense. And the abuse started getting worse. I ended up falling pregnant that year. He wanted me to have an abortion. And I really didn't know what to do at that point, because I was 15, and if I continued with the pregnancy, I was going to have my first child when I was 16. There was a lot of things that went through my mind, like, what would people say? My family already disowned me because of the path of destruction I chose after my dad's passing, so this was just going to make things even worse. So I didn't know what to do. I was really scared. Anyway, we went ahead with the abortion, all his commandments or all his instructions. And shortly after that, well, we split. He went his way and I went mine. And then I was back on this path of destruction, joining my friends and, well, drinking alcohol. And he came to know about it. I don't know how. And then he called me up and he's like, oh, you're going back to your old way of life. And I'm like, why do you care? I mean, you didn't want me. You didn't want this child. And so I don't think that sat well with him. So he ended up back in my life. The abuse continued. In fact, it started getting worse than the last time. And a year later, I found myself in the same predicament. I was pregnant, and he wanted me to abort that child as well. And I said, no way. Like, after everything I went through with the first abortion, there was absolutely no way that I was going to abort the second child. At that point in time, my dad's house, the electricity was cut because the attorney that was appointed as the executor of the estate was mismanaging the funds. He was not paying the utility bills. He swindled my dad's money. He ended up selling the house illegally. So it was really a bad time. And my abuser got kicked out of his house, and he claimed that it was because of me, and his parents did not approve of our relationship. So I ended up going back to live with my mom. At the time, she was living with her boyfriend. My abuser came with, but there was issues there with my mom and her boyfriend. So I ended up going to a friend's place, and well, my abuser said he was working like double shifts at work. And after going to my friend's place, I mean, obviously I couldn't stay with my friend forever, so I think I stayed there like 2 nights. And then I went to my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, and like I stayed there for a few nights. But my sister-in-law and my brother were not together at the time, and I didn't want to make things any worse for her, because if my brother came to find out, it was just going to make things worse for her and him. So I couldn't think of anyone else. I went to my social worker, and she was like, can't you think of someone else in the meantime? Because she wanted me to go and live in this shelter for single mothers. But obviously, I mean, there's a process and paperwork that needed to follow, so it was going to take a little bit of time. So I just thought of someone at the top of my head, and it was my mom's friend, who happens to be a teacher. So we went to her place, and this was after years. Like, I'm so thankful that she still lived at the same place. So my social worker took me to my mom's friend's place. We just rocked up at her place after years. Like, I'm not even joking, like I think maybe 5-10 years probably. And she was really surprised to see me, and pregnant for that matter. So she was very accommodating, and she was also a single mom, and she was very helpful and very kind. But I mean, obviously I could not live there forever. She had her own issues that she was dealing with. So as time went on, I ended up going to the shelter for single mothers. And the shelter was a Catholic shelter. It was just females, and the nuns used to take care of that shelter. So while I was in that shelter, there was a lot of things that went through my mind. Like, how did I end up in this situation? Like, what did I do wrong? And my abuser was like nowhere to be found. Like, I couldn't get a hold of him over the telephone. I would cry every day. I even called his family members, and I would cry to them. But it was really a hopeless situation. I'm thankful, you know, that in the shelter, I was not ill-treated in any way. Yes, we all had our duties to do. There was a roster of chores that you do in the week, and you would get a day off. The food was quite good, I'm not gonna lie, because they were getting sponsors from Woolworths. And in as much as it was a hopeless situation, it could have been worse. I always say it could have been worse. So after the child was born, so this is how the shelter works. You can live there for as long as you're pregnant, but after the child is born, you need to leave the place, because then they need to accommodate other women. And after the child was born, I was really worried. I was stressed out, like, what's gonna happen? Because I had nowhere to go. I really didn't want to return to my mom and grow my child up in that hostile, toxic environment. So the nuns from the shelter called my abuser, and at the time he managed to somehow go back to his parents' place, and he came over to the shelter with some of his family members. And well, that was the first time that they saw the baby. And thereafter, I think it was 2 or 3 days later where he came and fetched us from the shelter to go and live with him in his parents' home. We lived there for about 2 years. And in those 2 years, it was hell. It was torture. My abuser was not changing or mending his ways. You would think that, you know, after a child being born or baby, he would change those abusive ways and his abusive nature. But it did not get any better. So I would always leave and go to, well, my family members. And it was him that made amends with my family members and got them to, well, reunite with me, because after my dad's passing, they disowned me and we all went our separate ways. But he's the one that, bridged that gap, so to speak. So whenever he would fight with me or hit me, I would pack up and leave and go to my sister. Eventually, I just couldn't take it anymore. I had enough. There was this one incident where I don't know where he came home from, but he came home drunk. And his parents was downstairs. I was upstairs in our bedroom. And he just entered the room and started hitting me with his belt, with the buckle of his belt. And so I started screaming because, I mean, it was really painful. Like, I mean, who does that? So his dad intervened. And that was like really a huge argument and a huge fight in their house. So like there was a lot of other incidents and I just couldn't take it anymore. So I packed my stuff and I left, and I never returned to his parents' home. And I gave him an ultimatum. I'm like, it's either you can live there or you can find a place and you need to change. So he did find a place, and I feel that was like the biggest mistake, because now we were on our own. His parents were not there to save me or protect me every time he would beat me up. So we moved out. Things were okay for a little while, but then it started getting back to the old routine. In fact, every time that he would beat me, it's worse than the last time. Where we were living, it was not our own place. We were actually renting the place, and the landlord had two sons. So he would accuse me with one of the sons and say that's my boyfriend and make all kinds of allegations to justify his abuse. Eventually we moved out of that place, we moved to another place, and there was no difference. Like everywhere we moved, if there was a guy, automatically I am having an affair with the guy. Eventually I fell pregnant with my second child, and I quit my job during my pregnancy because it was just too much. Like coming home, getting beaten up, like going to work, and like my duties, I was a Girl Friday at the time, and my duties consisted of me going out like in heels and a suit and like standing in the queues at the bank or doing tax returns, etc., etc. And I just couldn't deal with all of that and still come home and get abused. So I just quit my job the one day. Like I just couldn't take it anymore. He was not happy about it at all. And then the abuse never stopped. Even during my first pregnancy, there was one incident when I was pregnant with my first child, before we could go our separate ways, before I could go to the shelter, where he was like fighting with me and I slipped, and while I was on the floor he kicked me, and I thought he was gonna kick me on my stomach. I was so scared, you know, because he didn't want that baby, but he kicked me on my lip, and my teeth got a bit chipped, but because of the force that he used when he kicked me, I started getting a concussion, and I couldn't remember who I was. I didn't know what day it was. I was supposed to be writing exams at that time. I forgot about the exams. All I remember is seeing this white light, and I was in the bedroom when he kicked me, but at the time after the white light, I was in the lounge, and that was strange because I don't remember going from the bedroom to the lounge. I just remember seeing a lot of blood everywhere. So that was the one incident when I was pregnant with my first child. And when I was pregnant with my second child, after quitting my job, maybe it was just too much for him to handle, the financial strain, or maybe he now had to take responsibility and he couldn't use his money for his pleasures, like drinking and partying with his friends, etc. So the beating for my second child, he started kneeing me in my stomach, and then he punched me on my eye. So when he left for work the next day, I packed my stuff and I went to my sister. So that was the back and forth thing. Eventually I went back home, and I would always go back. My son was born, then shortly after that, well, not shortly after that, maybe a year and a half later, he lost his job. We didn't have anywhere to go, we didn't have any money. Like we were literally down and out. So one of his friends that he used to party with, they actually opened up their doors to us, and we were living in their garage. The friend's wife was very kind and so accommodating. Eventually, my abuser got a job here in Joburg, and I got a job in Durban at the time. So things were very stressful again, because he was in Joburg, I was in Durban. He wanted me to come up to Joburg, and I refused. I'm like, that was the best chance for us to split. He would just show up on the weekends unannounced, maybe to try and catch me in these crazy scenarios that he would create in his head. Eventually, he had to come up with some sort of lie to get me to come to Joburg, but I only came up with one child, my son, that was the second child, and I left my daughter with his parents because then I had to return. So he told me that there was a job interview, which there really was. So I came up for the interview. The interview was the Monday, and he kept me here in Joburg for the entire week. I could not get a doctor's note for work, and when I returned to work, I lost my job. And I think that was the plan, because when I had my job, I was independent and I did not need him, so I think that was his fear. And still, we were fighting about me coming up to Joburg, and I refused. He sent like so many people to come and fetch me and fetch our stuff and come up to Joburg. Eventually, I did come up, and when I came up, there was a job interview, not the one that he tried to arrange, but there was another job interview because I was also job hunting after I lost my job. And it so happened that this one was here in Joburg. So I went for the interview. Unfortunately, I did not get the job at that time. But 2 weeks later, I got the job. So we were living with some of his family members when we first came up to Joburg, and as you can imagine, he was accusing me with his cousin's husband, which is absolutely absurd. It's ridiculous if you ask me. And so we found our own place shortly after that, moved to the place, and like the same routine, like he would accuse me, blame me, abuse me, and while justify the abuse because of my actions, which is scenarios that he would create in his mind. Eventually, you know, we did a lot of job hopping because there was better prospects. But the abuse got so bad, I had to lock him up. I had to get him arrested. And when he got out of jail, things didn't get better, because as we started job hopping, you know, I was now exposed to different working environments where there were guys, and the accusations got worse. The abuse got so bad. So we moved to a bigger place, and you know, the thing is, like, the traveling was an issue because I didn't have a car at that time, and I used to use public transport, so I had to use like maybe 2 or 3 buses to get home. And there was times that I would get home and it's quite late, so he would accuse me, like he would just come home and start beating me. Things got so bad. But you know, the funny thing is, like, we would always lose our jobs together and we'll start new jobs together, strangely. So there was an event in Durban. It was his niece's wedding, so we both put in leave, went for the wedding, and upon my return the Monday, my nanny quit. Like, she just quit on me, and there was no one to take care of my kids, and my abuser was still in Durban. He returned a day later, So we both did not go to work on the Monday, and both our companies knew that we took the weekend, well, the Friday, to go to Durban for this event. And so we both lost our jobs, because here in South Africa, if you are not at work on a Monday and a Friday, and if it's not planned leave, then the only excuse would be sick leave, and you would need to produce a doctor's note, which we did not have. And so we lost our jobs in that week, like days apart, and things started getting really hectic financially. I mean, having two little kids, it was very stressful. That was the second, well, actually that was the third time that we hit rock bottom again. And so the abuse continued. It got so bad to a point where he started using objects. He would take sticks and the belt and whatever he could find. The one time he hit me with the straightener, he broke the straightener on me. And then when he was done with the straightener, he took the cord off the straightener and he started beating me up. So one of our neighbors invited us over for lunch that weekend, because she really liked our kids a lot. And she got upset because we didn't go. But when she came to visit me, she saw that I was in the bedroom and I could not move. Like all I could do was cry, because he hit me so badly that my jaws was like closed shut because of the impact he used. My arms, my legs, everything like was battered and bruised so badly. And after he beat me up, he carried me to the bathroom, like filled the tub up with bath salt, brushed my teeth, gave me a bath, and put me back in bed. Like, the extent of the abuse started getting worse. It was like he turned into a monster. And, you know, it was really a tough journey. It was one of the toughest times of my life, because I had no support. I had no family here. My family was in Durban. I eventually got a job in 2015. And from that time, I planned, like, I'm going to leave this man. I can't do this. I can't live in this abuse. My main concern was, number one, my kids was being exposed to all of this. And number two, in this fit of rage, what if he kills me? Yes, the intent is to beat me, but what if he kills me by mistake in this abuse? And the main concern for me was my kids. So in 2015, you know, I spoke to HR where I worked. In fact, everywhere I worked, people could see the bruises, the blue marks, and there wasn't a time I can remember I never had bruises on my body, because the beating was a regular thing. Sometimes it was every day, but sometimes there was breaks in between, just depending on him. So 2015, I found a place. I did not know how that place looked. It was a one bedroom apartment. He still was out of work, and so he told me, like, why don't you come back to our flat? He will leave, and he has a job in another city called Cape Town. And so I went back to our flat, but this was a Sunday. But he returned the Monday, and he never left. So he eventually got a job as well. We moved out of that apartment to a bigger space. And, you know, it was like the same routine, like the same cycle, the same way of life. Things was just being repeated, you know. Lose our jobs, get jobs, get a bigger place. And the cycle would repeat itself. So after we moved into the bigger place, That's when I fell pregnant with my third child. And I did not want to have a third child because I had a girl and a boy, and I was quite happy with that. But he wanted another child. Even during the third pregnancy, he would beat me up and accuse me with the guys from work and all kinds of things. So when I started work at this company, the company was taken over by another company, so we merged with that company, and it so happened it was a government organization. After I had my third child, I told him, you know what, I'm done. I cannot have any more kids and I want to get sterilized. The night before I could go for my surgery, he beat me up so badly because he said that I did not ask him for permission and I'm just doing my own thing, etc., etc. And I was like thinking to myself, this is my body. Like, why do I need your permission? Eventually, he took me for the surgery the next morning because everything was already booked with the doctor. He was not happy about it. And I was really, really relieved because God knows how many other children we would have had together. And I feel as though that was his way of trapping me, you know, because how would I survive with three kids on my own, number one? And number two, which man is going to take me with three kids, you know? That was his mentality. So when the company merged, we got a really good salary alignment. It was like a benchmarking exercise. And that's when I was like, you know what, it's now or never. I had to hide this finance from him because nothing was a secret. Everything was an open book where he would be able to go into my finances and I would be able to go into his, etc. But his aunt passed away just before I could do all of these things. And it was something that kind of distracted him. So when we got back, I viewed other places for myself online. I did a 3D tour online of the place. And the day before I could move in, that is when I came through to collect the key and pay the deposit for the place. And the Friday, it was such an intense move because it was like do or die. If I got caught that day, he was literally going to kill me because of the fact that I hid everything from him and I was going to get caught in the act, packing my stuff and leaving. So I went to work as normal that morning and I left work shortly after I arrived at work because obviously I told management about all of this. Went home, packed my stuff. My kid didn't go to school. She helped pack because at the time I had a new nanny. And it was such an intense move, you know. It was like something straight out of the movies. So we fetched my son from school. And he was like constantly trying to call me because this was the thing. Like, as soon as I get to work, I need to call him. After him dropping me off, and like that was his way of checking if I'm still at work or keeping tabs on me. And so I did not take his calls. Then when I eventually called him, he started like swearing at me, and my friends could hear because they were sitting next to me, and like they really started panicking, you know. And then I fetched my son from school and came to the new house. When I came here, we literally just came with our clothing. We didn't even have like a single teaspoon. But the next day I went and bought whatever I needed for my place because of this good salary alignment with the new company. And the rest is history. Like, I never looked back. From the time I left my abuser, I have accomplished so many things because I wasn't allowed to do anything that would liberate me or make me independent. He put me in such a position where I had to depend on him. I wasn't allowed to drive. Funny enough, he was the one who taught me how to drive, but he would never let me drive the car. I wasn't allowed to go shopping on my own. He would always chauffeur me and he was always with me. I wasn't allowed to go and spend the day with family. If I did, he was with me. I wasn't allowed to take my kids out without him. I wasn't allowed to do a lot of things. And so after I left him, I got my driver's license. I bought myself a car. And, you know, life is great. Yes, there are challenges and there are days where it does get a lot. It's overwhelming. But I have accomplished so much in a short space of 2 years after leaving my abuser. And to the listeners, I just want to encourage you that there is life after abuse. It is never too late to accomplish your dreams. Whatever your heart's desires are, you can still accomplish that. Your dreams are perfectly attainable. But the first step would be to take back your power. The first step would be to leave and make that decision for yourself. I never in my wildest dreams imagined, number one, that I would share my story on a public platform. And thereafter, so many things fell into place. I started my own platform for women empowerment and the support group for abused women and or men. I started creating content for that platform, which I then discovered, you know what, digital marketing isn't that difficult. So I created a page and, well, started a business. And well, now I started this podcast. There has been so many favor connections from going live or going public with my story. And none of this would have happened if I did not decide, or if I did not make a decision to take back my life and take back my power. So to the listeners, again, I'm going to say there is hope after abuse. It's never too late. And all you have to do is believe in yourself. All right, so that is all for tonight. And I will be playing out with K. Michelle, Can't Raise a Man. Thank you all for listening, and until next week, have a good evening. Gonna cry, playing games that can never lose you. Hello and welcome to another episode of Take Back Your Power with Caroline. Alright, let me just do a bit of a recap because last week I was unable to do a podcast due to health conditions or health reasons. So in the first episode, I discussed the introduction and thereafter I did an episode titled Her Story, which was my story. Now tonight I will be discussing some of the red flags. So the title for this podcast will be Red Flags. Now, I've heard so many women make excuses for their abuser, like he only behaves like that when he is drunk, or he takes care of my financial needs and the household, or he only behaves like that when he is under the influence of substance abuse or intoxicated, or he only behaves like that when he is in company with certain caliber of people or friends, or they even go to the extent to say, no matter what, he never physically abused me. Some would even say he's with her but he loves me, or he'll come back, and so forth. Now let me share some of the red flags that were right in front of me, but I acted oblivious to the fact, which later on led to dire consequences and a very long sentence, if I can call it that. So first, it started with my abuser's dislikes. For an example, my dressing. But it would be put in such a way that you'd start to believe that your abuser really cares for you. So for an example, I used to like wearing short skirts and like open tops and crop tops and low cut jeans, because when I met my abuser at the time, I mean, I had a good body and my belly was pierced, and like I didn't really see an issue with the way I dressed. But he would come up with all kinds of excuses, like it's not good for me to be dressing like that because other guys are going to look at me, or it's not appropriate because what if one of his family members sees me? And he would make up all kinds of excuses. So it starts off with things like that. Or your abuser would limit your visits or your phone calls with family and friends, saying he wants you all to himself. From being an outgoing, extroverted person, I now found myself being an introverted, reserved person. I didn't even realize that I was slowly being stripped away of my personality, my bubbly, outgoing personality, my liberty, and most importantly, my human rights. Now, your abuser may start accusing you to justify their behavior. Your phone. will always be checked and or broken. There were long periods of times where I did not have a phone. And you would think that would make the situation better, because you're getting accused of chatting to other guys and calling up other guys. But instead, it also makes the situation worse, because now your abuser makes up all these scenarios in his head of your whereabouts for the day, and he can't reach you. But it was actually him that broke the phone. So that's also another red flag. You won't be allowed to go to the shop or run some errands without your abuser constantly being around. Now, while some women are manipulated into thinking their partner is overprotective, this is in no way healthy. And rather, it is your abuser who is being overpossessive. So that is just something that you need to be able to differentiate from an overprotective partner to an overpossessive abuser. Now, my abuser wanted to control every single thing, from the way I dressed, to the type of music that we would listen to, the kind of movies we would watch, what time we should go to bed. So for an example, if he's tired and wants to go to bed, like say around 7 p.m., then it's lights out at 7 p.m. If he is asleep and I wanted to wake up really early, like on the weekend to do household chores, he would get verbally and physically abusive, saying that I'm disturbing him. Or like for an example, if he's asleep or we are hungry, now when I say we, I'm referring to my kids and I, sometimes even putting the microwave on is an issue because of the sound that it makes, and that would disturb him. So he would just like wake up in a fit of rage, coming to attack me. Or if I wasn't well and I wanted to sleep in, he would either verbally or physically abuse me. There was an instance where I was really sick the one time, and he just like woke up really early on that morning and just started putting on music like really loud. And how inconsiderate is that? You know, there's so many incidents and there's so many red flags, but I was so oblivious. And I want to encourage the listeners tonight that there is absolutely no excuse, whether it's a slap, a shove against the wall, pulling off the hair, verbal insults, body shaming, or anything that will question you as an individual. Those are red flags. And oftentimes, we want to put our partners, who are actually abusers, on this pedestal. And we justify all the signs that are right in front of us, all in the name of love. Stop doing that. Stop doing that. Love does not hurt. Choose you from the start. Choose you. By being able to look out for these red flags, or being able to differentiate from what is healthy and unhealthy, being able to highlight some of the red flags, that could save you a lot of heartbreak. That could save you a sentence of being imprisoned by your abuser. And I call it a sentence because if it was that easy to get out, people would just get out. But you are trapped. You are trapped physically, you are trapped emotionally, you are trapped psychologically. So it is a sentence, and not everybody gets out. And some people get out in a body bag, and this is the seriousness of ignoring the red flags or overlooking the red flags. So tonight I really want to encourage you to choose you. And if you are just starting a relationship and you're starting to see these red flags, then it's best that you leave now. because the longer you overlook the red flags and the longer you stay, the harder it is to get out. So to the listeners out there, I really want to leave you with that tonight. Highlight the red flags, eliminate the red flags, and choose you. There is nothing worse than being trapped with an abuser. Heartbreak, yes, it hurts, but time heals. But being in an abusive relationship or in this sentence, it really does something to you as a victim or a victor. It changes you completely, and sometimes you may never get back that person before the abuse. The person you were before the abuse, you may never get that back. And it's really sad because not everybody is strong. Not everybody has the fight left in them. And some people are so manipulated and brainwashed by their abuser that they even become suicidal and they feel as though they have nothing left to live for. So before it gets to that point, because your abuser plays mind games. It's all about mind games. It's all about dominating you and controlling everything around you. And your whole life becomes about them. Before it gets to that point, get out now. We have come to the end of this episode. I just like to thank you all for listening. And tonight I will be playing out with Keisha Cole. And the title of the song is called Trust and Believe. This is the remix. Enjoy, peeps.